This is the best of the Phillies on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
So the Phils, you know, it's an interesting first half of the season. In many ways, I think we're quick to get into a bad mood, but we do know their limitations, and we see them on full display with frequency. Yesterday being an example, they won the game but scored two runs. I mean, they just don't score that much. The longer this has gone on with this group, the more that the pitching has distanced itself from the hitting, which, by the way, is very similar to what happened, you know, about 15 years ago when the Chase, Ryan, Jimmy group, you know, started lagging as hitters, primarily because Chase and Ryan were lagging as hitters compared to their former standard. I mean, you go back to 06, 07, 08, Chase and Ryan especially, they were monstrous players. And then as injuries set in, they just weren't. But then along came Cliff Lee and Roy Halladay and that whole thing. And so you had this like separation where the pitching was like up here and the hitting was a little bit more down.
We knew
this is a bigger separation. Rhea, this is a massive separation
but
right now.
Remember that game five against St. Louis.
Yep.
We knew if Roy Halladay gave up one run, they were going to lose.
So I would not agree with that.
I remember how we spoke about it leading up into that.
We were down on the offense, I know.
And he gave it up, I think, in the first inning.
I think it was a triple off the wall in the first batter, I think.
Yeah, and that was it.
I know.
It was done.
I know.
And we all felt that way in the stadium.
Well,
we did.
Well, Ryan Howard was in a hole. He had a home run in game one, and I believe did not get another hit the rest of the series. So, yeah, I mean, look, their pitching right now is incredible, and their hitting is not. And that leads to a lot of frustration for us. It also leads to a situation where, you know, I wonder, are we too hard on them? Are we properly hard on them? I mean, they do have the sixth best record in baseball, which is it's a terrific record. They're not an exceptional team, but they're pretty darn good. One thing we do know, Rob Thomson was very clear after the game yesterday that they could use the break.
I think everybody needs a break right now.
Why do you say that?
I just think we've been grinding, you know. There haven't been many games where you felt really comfortable. Everything's been a close game, whether we're down, whether we're up. And I think I think everybody just needs a little break right now.
Makes sense. I mean, John, look, we talk a lot about the bye in football. You know, that's kind of the most famous break, I guess, on an annual basis. But this one, I mean, that sport with the everyday reality, I'm sure they can.
The way 162 has to drain you, on you. You know, when you're a football player, the coaches always tell you, okay, we're gonna do a very small amount, maybe get ahead of, you know, whoever we're playing when we come back. Yeah. But it's just to make sure you guys aren't going to get in trouble anywhere. It's basically, we'll practice a bit, but then you guys just get away. Just get away. Get the heck away from football. Don't even think about it. And I'm sure they're saying the same thing to these guys. All-star break, guys, don't even think about baseball. Go and be with your families. Reset, recalibrate, and get ready to kick this thing into high gear because this year we did it different. This is what I'm hoping they're saying. This year we did it differently. We're trying to time this up a little bit better. And when it's all said and done, we're going to hit the ground running come whatever they term it.
Because they did peak in April and May last year. They did.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, they just, you know, early June and they hit a wall.
Let's see the reverse this time.
Yeah, I'm hoping.
You peak at the end in Red October.
I just worry about whether the Castellanoses and the JTs, the older guys have it in them to turn back the clock, and whether the younger guys have it in them to be good enough. I mean, just to be frank, because it's not about Stott and Bohm turning forward the clock. I wonder just how good really are they? Like, really? Like, how good are their careers going to be? Because the more I see Stott, the more I think he's the kind of guy. And I'm a Stott fan, right? I think everybody's a Stott fan. But he just strikes me as the kind of guy that maybe is destined to be a Pirate. You know, you're a starter in Major League Baseball, but you're just a Pirate. You know, you play on one of those teams. You know, you're one of those guys. I don't know that he's a winning player for the Phillies or for a team that's looking to contend for the next, you know, 5 years. I hope he proves it, but I'll say the last 2 years have been really disappointing. Let's go to the phones.
2-1. I have to conclude that he's, and this is me being hopeful about Bryson Stott, because I've always been a big believer. I have to assume, like, there's something wrong still.
Nope.
Like, why is he playing the way he played?
Can I ask you a question?
When he was supposedly injured last
season.
Let
me ask you a question. One of your former teammates, why wasn't L.J. Smith better?
Wow.
No, I'm asking. I mean, he looked like he was really good, and then he wasn't.
I don't think that you can draw a correlation.
No, but my
like
point
this.
Is all sorts of players look good initially and then aren't.
Dom Brown.
I think
Dom Brown's an all-timer.
Injury,
and baseball has him more than anybody.
Yeah.
I think
for whatever reason.
This injury affected the way that Bryson Stott played and his approach at the plate. And it's almost like he can't remember what it felt like to have that, I don't know, beneficial
I don't buy that.
Approach.
I mean, you could be right, but that's
I
not.
I think it's attainable again. I think he can find it somewhere again in there. And I don't think he's that far off because he's not supposed to be hurt.
No,
right
he's not.
But
I
then
just...
again, last year, we didn't know that he was hurt yet, and he kept going out there. You know, he's tough. He's trying to
I just
to
don't.
Push through
I don't think he's that good. I just don't.
See, I'm not ready to go there. I think he is that good. I think we got to give him a chance to be.
The All-Star Game. I know all you guys stayed up. I know everybody was fired up the All-Star Game last night. Was this the first ever All-Star swing-off?
Yes.
Were they? Okay, it was.
Yes.
So the All-Star game ends in a 6-6 tie last night. They go to a home run derby swing-off, and the hero, the guy who wins it for the National League, Kyle Schwarber, unbelievable performance. Kyle Schwarber, the MVP. Now, again, this is me not studying before the show. Maybe somebody has this information. I don't remember the last time a Phillies player was the MVP of the All-Star game. At least
Johnny Callison, I think I read
Callison's
that somewhere.
Callison's the only other one ever.
Okay, there you go. Thank you to Riem Buzz for that
we
info.
We read. You should try reading.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not a big reader. I knew Buzz would be right on that one.
I'm aware of that.
Yeah, but Kyle Schwarber wins the MVP in the swing-off. And I thought it was kind of fun. You know, the All-Star game is what it is now. It doesn't mean a whole lot. Not what it used to be. And we'll get into All-Star stuff throughout the course of the show. But Kyle Schwarber ends up being the star. And Kyle Schwarber, I guess that was kind of the exclamation point on what was an incredible first half for Kyle Schwarber. I mean, he hits 30-plus home runs in the first half of the season. And, you know, we're talking during the meeting before the show today. And we're talking about the midday show, and they put together this top five idea where we're putting together the top five athletes of the last quarter century. And I'd say kind of a revelation from John this morning. John, you would have Kyle Schwarber on your top five list. Is that correct?
Well, in light of, holy cow, last night's fireworks, and just let's take a step back and evaluate what Kyle Schwarber really is here. He is the leader of this Phillies team. I think he's trying to take the lead and lead this Phillies clubhouse. You know, Bryce Harper is a superstar, but I think Kyle Schwarber, with everything that he gives back in the community, think of it, you see him everywhere. You see his face doing projects out. You know,
well, you go into a Wawa, all you see is Kyle Schwarber.
It's incredible the way he gives back. And you know, he came here already established in Major League Baseball as a world champion, you know, a guy who had been playing at the highest level, you know, Boston, and then, you know, prior to that, in Chicago for all those years, you know, World Series champion, giving back in that city. I mean, it's too bad that we, you know, I'm a little jealous that we haven't had him younger in his career, more longer for his career, because you know how much he seems to truly care and give back, and it's genuine. And I appreciate that part of it, but the guy's a good person. The guy is a great, unbelievable swinger of a bat. The quickness, the I don't know, the hand bat speed, the hands, the hand quickness, the hand strength, the hand speed, the bat, whatever, the velocity he generates, just the whip.
So,
man, it is awesome. Anyway, his career is special.
So last night put him on the top five list for you.
It has to. I'm not saying he's there. I'm saying he's. I think it's. I was troubled that I'm thinking, holy cow, does he displace Donovan McNabb as my number five athlete of the last 25 years? Donovan McNabb was my five. Kyle Schwarber is my six. I know that for sure.
Well,
should Kyle Schwarber be on my list is the question here. In light of his awesomeness.
Let me just stop you right there, John. I'll just start with this. I think you're crazy. I think it's crazy for Kyle Schwarber to be in consideration to be in the top five.
And just 4 years in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of great athletes over the last 25 years. Kyle Schwarber's great, but Kyle Schwarber wouldn't be on my list. Kyle Schwarber, I mean, would probably be the third current Philly that I'd even consider behind Bryce Harper and Zach Wheeler.
Number 27, center fielder Mike Trout.
Well, listen to that.
You grew up here.
Yeah, that's impressive.
This is very impressive to see these Phillies faithful. Give Trout a nice round of applause as Lee delivers a strike.
And we've been known to boo Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. Mike Trout, more popular than both. They gave him a standing ovation. That's pretty impressive.
Welcome back. Midday Show. Hugh Douglas, Joe Gilla, Elliot Shore Parks in for Hugh today. All right, we'll get back to all your phone calls here on Quarter Century. Who deserves that final spot? The voting was super close between Jalen Hurts and Chase Utley for the final spot on our top five of the last quarter century here in Philadelphia sports. And, of course, best answer we get today to the best concert we should go to, like a concert we can't miss, a concert we have to go to, will win a pair of tickets to the Phillies now, and Red Sox on July 22nd.
Are we opening this up where it's just like a band? Or can we talk about a concert experience? Like, you need to see a concert. I don't want to take one. But, you know, at a certain venue.
No,
or something.
It could be an experience.
Okay, all right, yeah.
Yeah, like basically a show or a person. Like, you can't miss them. You got to go at some point and see them. Best one we hear today will win the tickets to the Phillies and Red Sox on Tuesday. All right, so Kyle played us in there with a blast from the past when Mike Trout got a big standing ovation here. Well, the Phillies are back in action tonight. The second half starts tonight. Phillies, and they welcome in the Angels and Mike Trout. And look, I know we've had many conversations over many years about Mike Trout and the Phillies. I'm just going to make one final plea to everyone. The Angels are in. The Phillies obviously have, 13 days till the trade deadline?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about it very simply this morning. There's no player the Phillies can acquire. There's no single bat that's going to be available better than Mike Trout. Mike Trout, I know people just stop paying attention to him because he's been hurt. He has played 70 games this year. His OPS is over 800. In his last, let me pull it up, 41 games since he came back from the injury list, he has a 9-11.
Don't want him, sorry.
Well, that's okay, Jolly.
I'm sorry. I didn't even mean to play that right there, but
in his last 41 games, he has a 9-11 OPS. He'd be the second best player on the team the minute he walked in the door. It'd be Schwarber and Mike Trout. Like if his name was someone else and it wasn't all the stuff associated with his injuries, you'd say he's the bat. I would trade for Mike Trout right now. I'm curious if people still want him, because Elliot, 5 years ago, it was like the dream to get Mike Trout. And then every time it comes up over the last 3, 4, 5 years, it feels like there's less of an appetite to bring in Mike Trout. I would still do it. If he's willing to waive his no trade and the Phillies could work out a deal for him, I would love Mike Trout in a Phillies uniform.
Yeah, so I think with a lot of things and all trades, it does depend on the price.
Yes.
Now, the issue with this, though, is even if, let's just say Mike Trout could come to the Phillies just for free, you'd have to trade anything for him. There is still the issue of his contract.
So it's five more years at $37 million a year.
Right. So that's a lot of money.
Yep.
The Phillies, while I give them credit for spending as much as they have, they are one of the teams that spend the most in baseball. It does seem they have a hard cap, right, where they can't just spend the Dodgers money, right?
And we're kind of near their
cap. And we
cap.
Are near that. So if you acquire Trout, I don't think it's crazy to say you are hurting your chances at re-signing Schwarber. Because they're probably roughly what Schwarber is projected around $40 million a year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, in the 30s.
Right, so it's roughly the same. My concern with Trout is, A, I am not doubling down on an old roster. The Phillies are already an old roster that are probably at their last go at this, mm-hmm. right? So if you acquire Trout, while I agree he does help the team this year and he would be perfect, and I think he'd be a welcome vibe change too. Like, I think he would become a face of the team, which I think is somewhat needed for
them.
He
also could invigorate the fan base.
Correct,
who feels right now very down on them.
Yes, I think there's a lot of positives with him. But I think that you got to remove emotion from this and say, I'm not trading one of the top three prospects for sure. Definitely not doing that. If you want to say Castellanos for Trout, Sure, I would probably do that. But there is the real contract part of this. So I am not as into it as you are.
I am curious, actually, how many people will be into it as I am. Again, if he is on the injured list, if he had played 15 games this year, the old thing would come back. He's always hurt. He's played 70 games. He has played, since he came back from the injuries, he missed some time in May. He has been probably one of the 10 best hitters in baseball. He's hitting the ball harder than he has in 5 years. He's walking more than he has in years. Like, I know his numbers aren't prime Mike Trout, but on this Phillies team, he'd be their second best hitter.
But he could also, 6 months from now or whatever, less than that, 4 or 5 months from now, he could be another player that we're looking at and going, what a horrendous contract
they have.
Trey Turner has been better this year. Still, I would say not a great contract.
I agree with that.
Bryce Harper contract looks worse every single time he plays. And Mike Trout could be right up there with him, plus Aaron Nola. So you are really risking a lot for this exact team. And here's the other thing with Trout. Do I know he'll be good in the postseason?
He's played three total games, and it was a decade ago.
Correct. Yeah. So, and again, only three games. Wasn't good in those three games, for what it's worth, right? But I have no idea if he can handle pressure. He's played in an irrelevant franchise, basically never plays meaningful games out there. Is he going to be able to handle coming home to Citizens Bank Park and playing in the playoffs in Citizens Bank Park? I don't know that. So I'm not as sure as you are that he'll come here and absolutely dominate.
And I'm not sure either, because we've seen him just for three games. It was a decade ago. He could be a great postseason player. He could be a dud. I don't know. I mean, Roy Halladay once upon a time never made the playoffs, and then he threw we're searching for a bat. There's no bat they're going to get that's better. And I know Byron Buxton's name has come up a bunch in the last few weeks. He's hurt all the time, too.
And didn't he say he's not going to accept the trade?
He said he wouldn't waive his no trade. I'm telling you, I'd be shocked if the Phillies find a bat better than Mike Trout. He's here this weekend. I would do it. Kyle, I know every time we bring this up, you're always anti-Mike Trout. Where are you now? And Elliot, made the idea that maybe we shouldn't go double down on this. I'm desperate. I'm desperate for a bat.
That's when you make bad decisions.
Well,
that's right.
We already made bad decisions. They paid Taiwan. They paid all these.
But
make another one.
No, hold on.
You sound like me with my credit card. It's like, well, I might as well just keep going at this point. Yeah. Well,
I need a bat.
But I think you're overstating how deep into this thing they are, because I think the best thing that Dave Dombrowski did this offseason was leave them at least a little bit of flexibility in terms of not fully overcommitting. I know they have a lot of money tied up in years to Harper, Turner, and Aaron Nola, but we're sort of at this inflection point with this Phillies team right now where we either can win the World Series or we have to start thinking about the next phase of Phillies baseball, and that means youth. Like, the Mike Trout thing, I think, would tip it over too far into where I feel like they're overcommitted. Because he's under contract for, what, another six?
Five more.
I can't do that, man. You know, and Joe, I'm disappointed because I told you last year to give it up. And clearly you didn't listen to me.
Oh, I'm not listening.
So
I've been locked in his last 40 games. I mean, the guy's red hot.
And you know what else?
He's on base the last 40 games. I mean, I listen to this. It's 433. 433.
Awesome. But like, okay.
Awesome. We can't get 300 on bases.
First of all, he played 29 games last year.
I'm in the now.
He's never healthy. And in the now,
but he's healthy
still
right now.
Listen, he was and is a career loser. You're going to tell me that this guy.
An important point here.
This guy was with Shohei freaking Ohtani.
Oh, jeez.
Two lock Hall of Famers already on the same team.
They went to
the playoffs once.
It's baseball.
He's a career loser.
Yeah. Well, he has been a loser. Doesn't mean he can't become a winner here.
To Kyle's point, though. I don't get the vibe Mike Trout super wants to come to Philadelphia.
He doesn't.
He's had a lot of opportunities to come here, unless it's for an Eagles game. He loves to come to Eagles games. But, are we sure this guy wants to come here? Now, I know he'd have to waive his no-trade clause, so he obviously needs to be into it to an extent.
Yep.
But you're right that they might not be a better bat. But when you take into account the entire situation, I think there are other players they could acquire that are not financially like as terrible as Trout is.
I just want them to make him say no. Work out a trade with the Angels and make him say no.
What would you be willing to give up, though? Because that's an important part of
this. Sure. Obviously not their top prospect.
Like, so you wouldn't give up Painter, Miller, or Crawford?
No, I would consider Miller or Crawford.
But you think, okay. So,
I think that's... Why?
I think that's bat bleep.
He's playing like one of the best players in baseball.
Joe.
All right, hold on. We all pumped up how good Trey Turner's been this year. His OPS is 50 points higher. Like, he's still pretty. I think because sometimes when a player goes from their perch at all-time great and they're not that anymore, we forget that that's still really good. If he came in here, he'd be the second best offense player on the team. Like, what, they're not going to accept nothing for him? You have to give him something.
I think you're viewing this the wrong way. Like, you are trading a future asset to make, like, one desperate last attempt with this team. And that's not where you don't make smart decisions when you're desperate and when you're trying frantically.
We're going to waste this era?
Yeah, I don't think it's wasting it. They've had their opportunity. Well, they have a chance this year. And you can acquire another player that doesn't, you know, really hurt you for the future.
You guys are too worried about the money.
You could say too worried about the money. The Phillies clearly have a hard cap.
Right, but they also have Castellanos come off the books after next year. So will Taiwan Walker. Like, and what's his name? Wheeler's going to retire in 2 years.
But that's the best thing that this team has going for them is that they're not overcommitted beyond like 2 years from now.
We're going to do the blind resume thing at 12:30. If I gave you a blind resume of Mike Trout and his numbers, you would say, go get that guy.
Of course, but the blind resume, if it included his contract,
it's a bad contract.
And his injury history. You're right. He's been hot right now.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean you make a massive financial commitment because of a small sample size.
I'm sitting here with Howie Roseman 1-2
Howie Roseman wins a lot.
Let's just go get good players.
You guilt tripped us with that they're going to waste this era.
They
can get Mike Trout or not and still win or not win the World Series.
Sure. But I want the last two deadlines, they got Austin Hayes and Rodolfo Castro. I want Mike Trout. I'm sorry.
Right, there's a middle ground.
Yeah,
and by the way, the thing Elliot brought up about potentially losing Kyle Schwarber, absolutely not.
Well, you also have a hedge if you lose Kyle Schwarber. You have Mike Trout.
But it's not a hedge you want.
I don't like
want.
That hedge.
Well,
yeah.
Why do you want to commit to 5 years of Mike Trout, who is hurt all the time, and how old is he now? He's got to be up there.
He's probably the same age as Bryce Harper. They came up at the same time.
Okay, yeah. So what?
He's 33.
33. So you're talking about committing to a player at somewhat max money for 5 years for what? For one attempt? Like at World Series?
Well, a hedge doesn't mean I'm also just saying goodbye to Schwarber. But if Schwarber leaves, at least I have a power bat that's on
my
team.
You're going to sign Schwarber as well? You think that's a financial possibility?
I think it could
be. You're then going to be committed to four guys that are in their mid-30s?
What else are they going to do? I mean, you guys act like they have...
There's a clear smart thing to do here. If they don't win the World Series this year, you let Schwarber walk, you go to the young players, and you welcome the next era of Phillies baseball.
We also just assume the next era is Utley, Rollins, and Howard. How do we even know these guys can play?
You don't, but you're never going to find out if you keep paying 30-year-old players tons of money.
I just want Mike Trout. I'm sorry. You guys are making me feel guilty for one of the greatest players of all time, Robin Delco.
I don't think he is one of the best players of all time.
Oh, he obviously is.
You cannot be the best player of all time with zero postseason experience.
He's one of the best players of all time.
And he's been awesome in an irrelevant franchise playing irrelevant games.
If you make a list of the top 25 players to ever play baseball, he's on the list.
And I think that's wrong, though.
Well, I mean, that's my list.
I'm just letting you know.
You know, it's funny, when we set up Quarter Century Week and we start talking about doing this, and tomorrow we will have the full voting for the top five athletes in Philadelphia sports over the last 25 years. And everyone here at WIP is sending us their lists, and I'm seeing them, and, you know, there's a lot of names in there. And it's kind of parsing between a lot of Eagles, but also a lot of Phillies. And we haven't gotten to the Phillies list yet. So today felt like the right day to get into the Phillies list. 215-592-9494. And, you know, every list is so different. Like the Eagles list, it was like, do I put any quarterbacks? Do I put the longest tenured players? The Sixers list we talked about yesterday was like, oh my goodness, can we even come up with five? Al unveiled his Flyers list for us on Monday. But the Phillies list was interesting because it felt easy, and then it wasn't quite as easy for me. So I started here, and I'll give you my list and want to hear yours and everyone else's. 215-592-9494. I started here with mine. Five best Phillies over the last 25 years. I started with this. The big four had to be there. I couldn't make the list with leaving one or two of them off on the Phillies list. Now, which ones make the overall list? That's a different story. But my list started with the big four from the 2008 team, and then I had to figure out who was the fifth guy. So my list goes as follows. Number one, Chase Utley. He was my favorite player on that team, and I thought he was the best player. I know a lot of people disagree with me over that. Whatever. I thought Utley was the best player on the 2008 Phillies and for that run. Number two is Jimmy Rollins. Now, he has the element of the longevity, the records. He started it. I mean, you think back, Jimmy Rollins was here in 01, like with Larry Boa, and then he spanned all the way to the middle of the next decade. Champion, borderline Hall of Famer, MVP. He's number two. Number three is Ryan Howard. I actually think we've begun to forget how great Howard was because we watched the end, and it was like, But the peak was amazing, and he was an MVP, and he was a huge part of it. Number three, Ryan Howard. My fourth Philly of the last 25 years is Cole Hamels. He was a World Series MVP, I almost thought he got overshadowed because they brought in other great pitchers, yep. Roy Halladay and Cliff Lee. But he did it for a long time. He did it at a super high level, and he brought the Phillies their best moment of the last 25 years. Cole Hamels, number four. And then at number five, it was hard because I think you could go with peak player, right? Roy Halladay was probably the best player for a two-year stretch maybe we've ever seen in the last 25 years. You could go with a guy right now that is dominating in Kyle Schwarber. You could go with Bryce Harper, who obviously did a lot to change the franchise and won an MVP in Bedlam at the Bank. But I landed on Zach Wheeler because of all the other options for number five, Wheeler to me was the best combination of dominance in the regular season, longevity, it's been 6 years now, and October greatness. He's the only one to me that has all of those things. And I think he's been better regular season-wise overall than Bryce Harper. I went with Wheeler. Look, Nola also has a case. I mean, you can make a case for a lot of guys at number five. But my five, my Phillies five over the last 25 years. Utley one, Rollins two, Howard three, Hamels four, Zach Wheeler number five. Kyle, your five Phillies of the quarter century.
Yeah, that was a fine list, Joe.
It was the accurate list.
Well, it wasn't. I had the same top four as you, just a little bit of a different order. Ryan Howard was my favorite player from that run. Then I went Chase Utley, then Jimmy Rollins, totally with you on Cole Hamels. But you made one glaring error when crafting this list, Joe. Bryce Harper deserves an automatic spot on everybody's top five list of the Phillies the last quarter century. He is the face of this era of Phillies baseball. We have two great eras, of Phillies baseball in the last quarter century. And the top four, I think, should appropriately be filled with those guys from that era. The Hamels, Utley, Rollins, Howard, those guys. But whether or not you want to say Zach Wheeler and Kyle Schwarber have been better lately than Bryce Harper, whether you like it or not, all of the success, all of the failures of this era of Phillies baseball will ultimately, when we look back, be on the shoulders of Mr. Bryce Harper. I mean, they just will. We do this with, look, Jalen Hurts, he's the face of this era of Eagles football. McNabb was the face of that previous era of Eagles football. We put all the failures, you know, a little bit on Andy Reid, but mostly they fall on Donovan McNabb. The Sixers, Allen Iverson, we love that team. But they didn't get over the hump, but everybody liked that era of Sixers basketball. That goes to Allen Iverson. This one, we're all angry with the Sixers right now. We'll get to the Embiid stuff later. But it's Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid wears the brunt of everybody's ire when it comes to how we evaluate this era of Sixers basketball. And the same is going to be said, you know, 10 years, you know, we have Bryce Harper for a while here under contract. We're going to look back. And this is all going to end up, whether it's right or wrong, it's going to end up on the shoulders of Bryce Harper. And that's leaving out the biggest part, maybe, about the whole Bryce Harper thing. He has been great here. He won an MVP for us. And, man, I just think too many people have soured on that 2022 run and what Bryce Harper did during that run. That was one of the most fun, like, months I've ever had watching Philly sports just in general. And I think Bryce Harper was the catalyst in that postseason run. So I don't want people to sour on that team and Bryce Harper and this era of Phillies baseball in the way that I see it trending. Bryce Harper should be on everybody's top five list. Everybody.
All right. See, the issue is the automatic thing. That's not existing anymore for me. Not the audit. Look, if you have Bryce Harper on your top five Phillies last quarter century, I don't think it's crazy. I agree with a lot of actually what you said there, especially how he kind of turned this thing around. Right. Yeah. He was the first person to sign here, and then the trade for Real Muto, and like all this happened, and they signed Wheeler and all that, and then they signed Schwarber. I mean, this thing changed with Bryce Harper. Yep. I agree with that. But it's not automatic anymore. A couple things. Number one, he has an MVP. But is it fair to point out that his MVP season came in a mediocre year? Not for him. He was great. But, like, the Phillies were 500 that year. He has an MVP, but it wasn't even on one of their better teams. And his best play in his career wasn't even here. Like, he was better as a National than he was as a Philly. That's just been the reality. His best ever year was with the Nationals over the Phillies. And, yes, he's got great moments. But he hasn't been better here than Zach Wheeler. He just hasn't. Maybe more important to the whole operation because he signed here, but he hasn't been better than Wheeler. And I would say over the last year, his perch has fallen from even being the best player on the team.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. Like, Zach Wheeler's been better, I mean, for the last few years. Kyle Schwarber's definitely been better this year. And I think people are, I think people more universally like Kyle Schwarber and Zach Wheeler around here than they do Bryce Harper.
Certainly,
but
less frustration with those guys.
Right. But like, but all that is to say, like, that that sort of goes to what I'm saying, is that Bryce Harper, where, like, it's just like we do with Jalen Hurts. When the team loses, it goes, it falls on Jalen Hurts. When the team wins, you know, everybody props up Jalen Hurts. The same thing happens with Bryce Harper. We're all just so frustrated with the Phillies right now that I think people are too down on Bryce Harper, and they're not able to sort of zoom out and just look at what he's meant to this era of Phillies baseball. Now, the Phillies didn't immediately become contenders when they signed Bryce Harper.
Right, it took but, 4 years.
Right,
yeah.
But that's not how baseball works. And you're right, the 2021 MVP, it wasn't the greatest year for MVP candidacy. But I don't even think that's his best moment as a Philly.
Well,
like,
no,
his best moment as a Philly came in the postseason, yep. That dominant run that he had. I mean, I remember sitting there watching Bryce Harper every time he came up to the plate, and I was like, this man might be, like, when he was locked in, I was like, he might be, like, the best hitter I've ever seen. Like, that was how far I dove headfirst into that Phillies run and what Bryce Harper was doing. Like, it was amazing to watch. And I implore everybody to not let yourself sour on this the 2022 team. And, you know, everyone's upset with the 23 team, the 24 team, but, like, the 22 team almost stands alone for me. That was such a fun run. Like, that might end up being the pinnacle of this era of Phillies baseball. And that was fun. Like, I know everyone's upset about it, but, like, stop. That lands on Bryce Harper. Like, I think everybody needs to have one spot reserved
for one guy in this era,
and that's Bryce Harper.
No, see, the automatic thing, I can't do that. 215-592-9494. All right, at the risk of being called a hater, I need to point out some facts here, okay?
Oh, great.
And before I say this, I want to say I'm being consistent, because I don't push Jalen Hurts higher up list than I believe he deserves, only because of the playoffs, only because of the Super Bowl, which I think some people do, right?
Yep.
I think it's got to be everything. May I point out just some facts about Bryce Harper's career? Okay, well, I'm going to do it anyway. And I'm not trying to tell you he hasn't been important to the franchise. Obviously, the signing was imperative, and I think it was worth it. I'm so glad he's here. This is his seventh season with the Philly. We've watched him play in an All-Star game one time. Seven seasons, one All-Star game he has played in. Yeah, he could have played in a second one. He had broke his thumb in San Diego, so it would have been two. Two out of seven. This is seventh year with the Phillies. He's going to hit 30 home runs in a season twice. I don't think he's going to hit 20 more home runs the rest of the way. So that means in 7 years, he's going to hit 30 home runs two times. In 7 years, he's going to finish top five for MVP once. That was the year he won it. I mean, he's been very good. But, like, when you say automatic, that means great. And I don't feel like for 7 years he's been consistently great. He's had great moments. He's had one great season. He's been great, totally great in October. But 7 years,
yeah.
One top five MVP finish, one time I got to watch the All-Star game with him in it. Those are facts.
But, all right, but you know what this reminds me of? Mm. This reminds me of the conversation that a lot of us have with Jalen Hurts on the Eagles. Now, the Eagles are Super Bowl champions, so it makes it a little bit easier. But Jalen Hurts, I think, deserves an automatic spot in everyone's top five Eagles the last quarter century. Like, while he might not be the best player on the Eagles, might not even be a top five best player on the Eagles, I didn't put him on my top 11 list because I thought there were a lot of Eagles right now that are just better players than him. But Jalen Hurts is, whether everyone likes it or not, is the face of this era of Eagles football.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
He just is. And like I think you won't find a single soul out there that would leave Jalen Hurts off the top five Eagles the last quarter century. Jalen Hurts, I feel like for a lot of people, gets an automatic bid on everyone's top five. Bryce Harper should be the same. Whether Wheeler and Schwarber have been better than him or not, whether you want to talk about how many MVPs he's won, I mean, Jalen Hurts has been, one Pro Bowl, right? He does have the Super Bowl MVP, but, like, we're not talking about just years and years of dominance from Jalen Hurts. We don't get that with Bryce either, but Jalen Hurts is the face of the Eagles. He gets on everyone's top five. Bryce Harper is the face of this era of Phillies baseball. He should be on everybody's top five.
No. 215-592-9494. That's how you hop it. Are your Phillies top five? Last quarter century, who are the five best Phillies? And really, it comes down to this. Because I could be wrong, but I think most people are going to have the four faces of the 07-11 run.
Yep.
On the list in some order. I think. Well, maybe some people won't. But I think they're all going to be there. So who gets that fifth spot? And is Bryce Harper automatic? Like, I understand Kyle's point. I'm not saying if you have Bryce, you're crazy. I mean, Bryce obviously has been an amazing player for the Phillies and done a lot here. But the automatic thing, I can't do automatic based on what he's provided here for the Philadelphia Phillies. Yeah. All right, Fran, what do you got for us? Fran, your top five, and is Bryce Harper an automatic for you?
So I'm going to start with Utley. Go Utley. Mm-hmm. Going to go Howard, J-Roll. I think I'm going Cole four.
Okay.
Going Cole four. I think I'm going Wheeler.
Fran and I are aligned. These are baseball guys.
Look, it's a toss-up between Wheeler and Bryce. Wheeler's got the playoff numbers too, man. I know Bryce has Bedlam, but Wheeler's got historic playoff numbers. And the dominance he's had since the last 5 or 6 years. Bryce has missed time, by the way. He's been injured. So, I can see the argument for Bryce, but I guaranteed spot now. I like Wheeler 5.
This is unbelievable.
You know what? Let's throw one more fact in. Mm. 7 years here, Bryce Harper's going to play in 150 games in a season once.
Sound like a hater.
Well, no, these are facts. I mean, you point out facts, people get upset. These are the facts. All right, let's go to the phone lines here. Your Phillies top five of the quarter century. And really, does Bryce Harper deserve an automatic spot? That's where I push back. Automatic means, like, Chase Utley, Jimmy Rollins deserves an automatic spot. However you rank your favorite Phillies from that era, he's the all-time hits leader. He was here for a decade and a half. He's an MVP and a World Series. That's automatic. Bryce Harper, it's not automatic.
It's really going to come down to whether the Phillies, and I said this earlier, it's going to come down to whether they really think this team has a shot or not. And I think it's going to tell... it's going to be very telling to see how they react at the deadline, because that's what this is about. Like, we all watch the team play every day, and nationally, honestly, they don't really have a clue. Like, because if you look at it from the outside and you just look at the record and you look at the starting rotation, you look at the names in the lineup, you know, you'd think, okay, well, this team, they're in good shape. They're going to make a run. They just need a minor tweak here, a minor tweak there. But we watch the team every day. Like, we see it on a daily basis. And anybody who watches this team play every day knows that the lineup is nowhere near good enough. Like, you need a big addition, or else you have no chance. This team has no chance to hit in the playoffs. And now I'm not just talking about winning, you know, a series here or there. You need to play well for a whole month. And the way it's looking with the standings right now is you could win the NL East and you'll still have to play in that 3-game wild card series. Like, we've assumed, oh, you win the division, you're going to get the bye. Not necessarily this year, because the Central's so good and the Cubs are playing so well. So you might need to win 4 rounds. You're going to need another bat, because guys are going to get cold. Guys are going to, you know, kind of cool off throughout the course of the lineup. So you need depth. You need more there. And the bullpen... you need 2 bullpen arms, I think, at a minimum. Because Jordan Romano stinks, okay? Like, we've seen that this year throughout the course of the season. Jordan Romano is not going to come around. He's not going to figure it out. You have what in the bullpen? You have Kirkering, who's been really good lately. I mean, Tanner Banks has been pretty good. I still can't tell you, though. Like, I don't want Tanner Banks out there in the 7th or 8th inning of a playoff game. And then you have Strom, who... even though his numbers look okay, Strom just hasn't looked right all year long.
Very shaky.
Yeah, you need a couple arms, no question about it. You need a couple arms at the deadline.
The wild card thing is a good point, because even if you do win the division, the NL is very good. If the season ended today, you play the Padres in the wild card round, who you just lost 2 out of 3 to. You feeling that good against the Padres with this current lineup and this current rotation? I don't think so.
Well, you just lost a series to them over the weekend.
Exactly. Or the Mets are right there, who embarrassed you last year. The Brewers are right there, who have been playing very good baseball as of late. Like, the NL is really good. The AL is a bit of a mess. The NL is really good to where this current Phillies team just is not good enough. And it is insane just how tough it is sometimes to manufacture these runs. What game was, I think it was the Saturday night game, when you had runners on 2nd and 3rd in the 7th inning, couldn't get them home, couldn't get one guy home. And it was a one-run ball game for us. It was either tied or a one-run ball game. 8th inning, runners at the corners, 2 outs, couldn't score a run. 9th inning, you have the top of your lineup. You have Turner, Schwarber, and Harper. 1, 2, 3, they're done. And then Harper swings at the first pitch and grounds out the first base. It's just this lineup cannot hit with runners in scoring position, and you can't really trust anybody to do so. I mean, just going back to Max Kepler, since we're just, you know, ragging on him, He's been awful the entire year with runners in scoring position. Even when he's been hitting the ball a little well, hitting a home run every now and then, he cannot hit with runners in scoring position. Stott pops up on the infield or shallow outfield every other time. There's so many guys that they come up to the plate and you're so iffy on. And even Trey went through a bit of a cold stretch this last week. He was hitting the ball great for most of the season, but he cooled off this last week.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, I mean, they're going to need to figure it out, and I don't think it's going to get significantly better without external additions. The Phillies have hit the halfway point, and as we hit the halfway point in the season, a little past halfway to be honest with you, the All-Star break is really when you divide it up into the first half and second half. Phillies 55-41. A half game in front of the Mets for first place in the NL East. And today we're going to evaluate this team through the first half and where this team is at, how things have gone. And what I want today from you to start the show is I want the one word that you would use to describe the Phillies' first half of the season so far. What word would you use to describe it and why? 215-592-9494 if you want to get in. 215-592-9494. What's the one word you would describe for the Phillies in the first half of the season, the way they played and why? And thinking about it for me, the word I would use would be predictable. Because I think when you look at this season, you look at the way it's gone so far, it's gone pretty much exactly how I thought it would go. My opinion of this team has not changed at all. It's the same as it was a month ago. It's the same as it was on opening day. It's the same as it was at the start of spring training. And honestly, it's the same as it was the minute that they were eliminated by the Mets last year in the playoffs. This team and what has happened so far, the way they played in the first half of the season, is extremely predictable. And that's the word I've come up with for a number of reasons. We knew coming into the season the starting pitching was going to be great. The starting pitching has been great. The starting pitching, if anything, has been better than expected. Christopher Sanchez, even better than last year. Zach Wheeler, we've seen him be the best pitcher in baseball since he got here. It's arguably Zach Wheeler's best year as a Philly. Even with Aaron Nola getting injured, Ranger Suarez has been great. Jesus Luzardo overall has been good. The starting pitching's been great. We knew Kyle Schwarber had hit a bunch of home runs. Kyle Schwarber has hit a bunch of home runs. We knew, or at least I knew, Rob Thompson's a good manager. I think Rob Thompson has been a good manager for this team. But as we look at all those positive things, the same also applies for the other side. Because coming into this year, we knew the bullpen was spotty. Jose Alvarado, unexpected and unfortunate, obviously, that he got suspended. But the bullpen, I didn't think coming in it was very good. The bullpen has not been very good. We knew the defense was average at best. That's pretty much what you've seen. You've seen this defense be okay, but make mistakes that have hurt them at times. And we knew, and they knew after the Mets series, in my opinion, that the offense was not good enough and was getting worse. And what we have seen this year, through the first half of the season, despite how good the starting pitching has been, despite the record that the Phillies have, the offense has not been good enough, and the offense is getting worse. And it's why coming into this season, I think many others weren't as excited as we've been in past years. I mean, you could feel it during spring training. People were happy baseball was back, but there wasn't that same type of anticipation that there's been in past years. And people can chalk it up to the Eagles just won the Super Bowl. I don't believe that. I think if this was a team that people truly believed in, being a World Series contender, truly believed in as being a true contender, one of the best teams in baseball, that excitement would have been there. But it wasn't. And I think coming into this year, and so far from what we've seen in the first half of the season, I wanted the Phillies to change my mind. I wanted to get to this point in the year and feel like, you know what, I did underrate this team. I was a little down on this team, disrespectful to this team during the offseason and spring training. But I don't feel that at all. I feel the exact same way that I felt before the season started. This is a good team. This is a playoff team. But this is not a true contender. And it's how I felt the whole time. It's how I still feel now. And the first half of the season to me has been extremely predictable. It's gone exactly the way I thought it would go, where you're going to have great starting pitching, but the offense is going to struggle. The offense is going to be up and down. You're going to have a good record. They're first place in the NL East. I thought they'd win the division. I still think they will win the division. But is my mind changed in terms of this team being a true World Series contender? It hasn't. They're a playoff team. I don't think they're a title team. And I want to know how you feel. What's the word that you would use to describe the Phillies in the first half? 215-592-9494 if you want to get in. 215-592-9494. That's how you join the show. I'll ask Justin D'Orazio, who's producing the show today. Happy All-Star Week, Justin. You look thrilled to be in today, as always. You always have like a little bit of a grumpy look on your face, Justin.
That's just my natural face. Yeah, I was sitting here thinking of a word.
And this is bad if I'm telling you this. You got to be a little more smiley, man.
What do you mean? Am I not being smiley enough for you?
No, you're smiling a little bit now.
Well, I was just thinking about how you never asked me these questions before we get on the air. So then I'm sitting here, I'm trying to think of a word to describe the Philly season.
I do that on purpose. You got to think on the fly here.
Well, then you're going to call me out for how I look when I'm thinking.
Well, that's true. What's a word that you would use?
What was the word that you used?
Predictable.
Yeah, I would say guaranteed, right? I would say that this is a guaranteed, because this is what they were sold to me as in the beginning of the season. This is what I kind of expected them to be.
Yeah, that's good. And I think that's exactly kind of the way I view it. And I want to know how other people feel out there. What's a word that you would use to describe the Phillies in the first half? 215-592-9494. To me, extremely predictable. I think guaranteed, kind of a similar thing, but it does seem like this was a situation where it was almost destined to be this way.
I want to change my word.
You're changing the word.
Yeah, okay. I would say upside. Because in the beginning upside. Of the season, last night I was thinking about how I didn't actually think the Phillies would be in first place of the NL East. I thought the Mets were going to be in first place. I thought the Mets were going to kind of get a further ahead lead than the Phillies at this point in the season. I didn't think it'd be back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So I would say upside. There's been a little more upside to this team than I thought there would be. But there still needs to be improvements to this team. And upside works in two ways, because there's still more upside to be found in the second half of the season.
Okay, well, I get what you're saying there. And if you want to get in, 215-592-9494, what's the word you would use? For Justin, it's upside. For me, it's predictable. And to me, that's the most frustrating part of this thing, is when you look at this team and you look at their flaws, I knew they were there. Like, and I think most people knew they were there. The Phillies should have known they were there, but they denied it. And that's the thing that I keep looking back at, and I find to be the most egregious thing. And today I'm getting ready for the show, and I'm thinking back to that press conference immediately after the Mets series. And some of the things that Dave Dombrowski had to say, and first off, here was Dave Dombrowski at that point talking about going into last offseason, how he could look at upgrading the roster this year.
Dave, when you look at upgrading the roster in some spots, what type of player do you think this team needs, or what type of skill set are you guys looking for in upgrades?
Well, that's a general question. That's a really tough one to answer, because you just have to wait and see when you talk to people. You're looking to make your club better. You're not looking to be in a position to just change faces. So I think you're in a position where it depends upon who's available and how we weigh that and how they fit into your club. So, I mean, the way I would answer that question, we want championship players. Now describe that. Well, there's a lot that goes into that, and I think that's how we approach it.
Now, that's a big word out there. I don't even know what Dave Dombrowski was getting at there. Yeah, of course you want championship players, Dave. Thanks for pointing that out. But here was more, and this, I think, is the thing that frustrates me the most. Because you look at this team, and you look at this offense particularly, the offense right now is bad. The offense over the last week was brutal to watch. Out west, aside from that one game against the Giants on Wednesday, they couldn't really do anything. And I feel like this was evident last year in the playoffs, but Dave Dombrowski denied it. Here was Dombrowski last year, right after that Mets series, being asked about the offense and their performance.
Yeah, the unfortunate part, you have a tendency to focus only on your own club, right? This is a downtime from an offensive perspective in professional baseball. What was the average? 243 at the end of the year? Most of our hitters were better than 243. You see the scores in the games. In most of the postseason, there's not a lot of run production taking place. So at times we are vulnerable to being pitched well, as are other clubs. But I can't say that like going into the last 2 months of the season that we thought, oh, that was going to be a major issue for us. But it's something we'll look at. We'll take a look at trying to address to see if we can make some changes. Sometimes you know, we talk about, it's interesting, and I know a theme is chase rate, right? I mean, everybody I read in here writes about chase rate. I think it was interesting, we got eliminated. We were sixth in major of the 12 clubs in chase rate in the postseason. And so that's not good, but it's not the worst. We didn't hit. We really didn't hit. Some of it's chase, some of it's approach, some of it's guys not being hot. We actually, if you looked at it, we chased less than the Mets did in that series, percentage-wise.
And that's the thing, man. We knew it. We watched that series. I feel like everyone knew it. We saw the whole second half of the season. Like Dave Dombrowski and the Phillies, they chalked it up to one series when it was really the second half of the season. And I said it before, that we chased less than the Mets. I mean, why don't we hang the freaking banner? We chased less than the Mets in that series. Well, guess what the Mets did? They scored more runs than you did. They were able to score runs. You weren't able to score runs. And in the end, the Phillies, this past offseason, they decided to rearrange the deck chairs. They decided they were going to move guys around the lineup, and guess where we become? And this is another thing that goes to the predictable part of things, is I felt like the whole time they'll change up the order, they'll move different pieces around, but in the end, they're going to go back to what's comfortable. What happens yesterday? Kyle Schwarber's in the leadoff spot. I'd expect that to be the way it is going forward. I think Kyle Schwarber's going to be back leading off again. Very predictable outcome. You know, you changed a couple things in the bullpen. Jeff Hoffman out, Jordan Romano in. That's blown up in your face. Austin Hayes out, Max Kepler in. One guy who didn't produce for another guy who hasn't produced. Moves that were based in hope instead of actual facts. And it was just obvious that this was going to be the result. And I love this team. Like, I want this team to win, and it's why I get so frustrated, but I need to be honest. Like, if you ask me right now, do I feel better or worse about the Phillies winning the World Series, I feel worse, and I want to know how you feel on that as well. 215-592-9494. The offseason moves were a disaster. The offense is worse than expected. The young guys in the minors, who you thought you could rely on this year, Andrew Painter, Justin Crawford, apparently they're not ready since they're not here yet. And our hopes at this point, once again, basically hinge on Dave Dombrowski, whose track record since the 2022 World Series is not good, aside from the Trey Turner signing. And hey, maybe this is unfair. I attribute the Trey Turner signing to John Middleton. I mean, if John Middleton's going to cut Trey Turner a $300 million check, there's not a whole lot Dave Dombrowski needs to do in those negotiations. But aside from that, his track record has been awful. And now the only hope, as I see it, is for Dave Dombrowski to rescue this team, for Dave Dombrowski to save this team. Do I feel good about that? Absolutely not. And I want to know, in addition to your word, what word would you use to describe the Phillies in the first half? And also, do you feel better or worse about their chances to win the World Series? Because I'll tell you this, man, even with the starting pitching being as great as it's been, even with the opportunity to make upgrades over the next couple weeks, I absolutely feel worse about their chances.
When we were doing all this Phillies talk today, we were thinking about all the moments, right? The great moments of the last 25 years.
Yep.
And you pointed out early, Kyle, that part of the Bryce Harper thing is he has one of those moments, if not the moment, which is Bedlam at the Bank, not Park, and not bedtime.
Bedtime, yeah.
Where does the bedtime come from? He put the Padres to sleep? Is that? Or was just he misspoke?
I think he was just being a jerk.
Okay. Yeah. All right, well, that could be. So we started thinking about the great moments. Uh-huh. And then we're like, all right, maybe we could do a top five moments of the last 25 years. Unfortunately, there's a lot. You know, for a team that's only won one World Series, the Phillies have a lot of special moments in the last 25 years. So we have seven of them here. Let's roll through them. We'll go in chronological order. We'll have fun.
We have seven in our top five?
Well, we're going to have to cut two out. So that's going to be the task for us. When this is, let's listen all seven together and then figure out which ones are really the five that belong, because I don't know which five it is. All right, here we go. In chronological order, we start in the divisional round in 2008, the Milwaukee Brewers, the Phillies. Brett Myers leading into Shane Victorino.
Man at third, and the pitcher Brett Myers coming to the plate. We had just four hits during the season, and he rips through a fastball. Sabathia coming to the plate, and a swing and a miss again. But it's nothing at two. And just missed, I guess, the inside corner.
No, it didn't.
I think Mark Wagner might have just missed.
Oh, my. If that wasn't a strike, there is no strike.
Swing at a little cue shot, foul fly.
A big hand, too, for the contact.
And that one's down low. Two balls, two strikes. Swing at a ball fouled away to the right side. Another big cheer. In the dirt low. And the count is now full at 3-2.
Well, you talk about somebody really working a pitcher.
And the payoff pitch. Swing and a chopper, foul, third base side. He's still alive.
The next pitch will be Sabathia's 40th.
Sabathia delivers. Down and in, ball four. He walked him. Sabathia with a 1-2 pitch. Swing and a drive. Down the left field line. Braun going
Come
back.
On,
he looks up, and it is gone!
Yes!
Grand slam, Victorino!
Oh, my!
Phillies lead here in the second. 5-1.
A 1-2 pitch. Oh, is that huge?
All right, a couple things stand out to me. One, I love the context that Scott gave there, that Brett Myers only had four hits the whole season, and then he worked that count against what was probably the best pitcher in baseball that year.
Yeah.
So Sabathia, we know he got traded to the Brewers, right, during that season? He pitched for the Brewers 17 games to a 1.65 ERA, and then the Phillies tagged him for five runs. Obviously, the Grand Slam it was that, in 3 2/3. The other thing I love about that call, I love during that run when you could hear L.A. like cheering him on, like in the moment.
Yes.
And like he's like, he wants that ball to get out, and he's cheering him on.
My dad took me to that game, so I was in the building for that. I think I was like 13, 2008, 13. That math for me. The Brett Myers at bat, and you can hear it in that cut. Like the stadium is getting progressively louder with every single pitch. Like that was one of those Philly fans are smart fans thing. Like we knew the moment.
Yep.
It was just a few foul balls. It was just a few balls. But it was so much more than that. Like to run up CC Sabathia's count and then load the bases, like getting on with the walk was unbelievable. And then the stadium exploded when Victorino hit that home run or the grand slam. Like, I don't think I've ever been a place as louder in my entire life. And the best part about it was, even knowing how good Sabathia was that season, the chants throughout the stadium,
CC
sucks, was awesome. And, I mean, man, he sucked that day. That was not a good showing.
So that, you know what it kind of reminds me of? And we're going to get to this later in these lists of audio moments. It kind of reminds me of when Stotts at bat zapped Strider in 22 before the Hoskins home run.
Yep.
Because Sabathia, I thought he was gassed after the at bat to Myers. And then Victorino took him out. He threw 98 pitches in 3 2/3. They got him.
They really did. Yeah.
They got him. All right, there's the first one. All right, number two. This one happened in the next round in L.A. Matt Stairs sends one into the night.
Stairs rips one into the night. Deep into right. Way out of here. And Philadelphia gets a pinch hit, two-run shot, and the Phillies lead 7-5 in the eighth.
I remember watching that, and the moment it went off as bad, I said to myself, the Phillies are going to win the World Series.
Yes.
Because, you know, the first round, they knocked the Brewers out. The Dodgers thing, I thought they were better, but it was back and forth. I don't think the Red Sox-Rays series was over yet, but it was just like, the Phillies are going to win the whole thing.
Yeah, and sometimes you know it when it's... The beauty of playoff baseball are the contributions from the guys that are the unsung heroes or like the guys that you don't expect those contributions to come from. And that from Matt Stairs, moonshot from Matt Stairs. And that, I think, also was kind of the moment, at least for me, I was like, well, we're definitely winning this Dodgers series. Like, this team is going to the World Series.
Yeah, and they did. All right, Stairs number two. Third, a few weeks later, to finish off the World Series, Brad Lynch.
Fans on feet. Rally towels are being waved. Brad Lynch stretches. The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
The fact that it's Harry on the call adds to that one. I mean, obviously, it's the only championship, so I has to make the list.
It had to be Harry.
Yeah, but it had to be Harry.
Well, almost like that kind of has to be number one, doesn't it?
I think it's going to end number one. Yeah, you know what? I'll say it this way. It's a lock for the top five.
Okay, well.
It's a guarantee. It has to be.
Of course. No, I'm saying. Well,
unlike Bryce Harper.
Well, hold on a second. The bedlam at the bank, I think, deserves an automatic spot on this list.
I think you're going to be right. Let's play it out and keep going. All right, a year later, Philly's trying to get back to the World Series against that same team in the NLCS. Game four, Philly's up 2-1 in the series. Jimmy Rollins off Broxton.
Swing and a drive, right center field. This one is falling. It's a base hit. It'll go up the alley. Rutland will score. Ruiz around third. He is being waved home. The Phillies have won the ball game. Ruiz slides. Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout.
Yeah.
Rollins back near third. This game is over as the Phillies strike again with two outs in the ninth inning, and they have a 3-1 lead.
My goodness, they owned Broxton during that time. That guy has nightmares about this place.
That is my favorite call by Scott Fransky of all time.
And you have LA again with cheering in the background.
Oh my goodness, it's amazing. And that is like, that's such a significant moment in that series. That series could have been 2-2.
Yep, heading back to LA.
Yeah, and then to hit that, for it to end that way, go up 3-1, like, oh my goodness. Like, that call, that and the Bedlam at the Bank, one of the two that, like, every time I hear them, I get goosebumps.
Yeah, it really is an amazing call by Scott Fransky. All right, let's go to 1 year later, not a year that ended in a World Series trip, which is kind of rare for all the other ones, but it's an all-time baseball moment. Division Series against the Cincinnati Reds, Roy Halladay.
Just about a 7:45, October the 6th. 2010, the first postseason game for Roy Halladay. He winds the 0-2, swing and a dribbler out in front of the plate. Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time, and it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and Halladay embrace, and the Phillies again celebrate around Roy Halladay. 4-0. It's the second no-hitter in Major League postseason history. Here tonight at Citizens Bank Park.
So two things come to mind. What a call, obviously, by Scott.
Yeah, I lied. That was another one that gave me goosebumps.
Yeah, I remember where I was watching that. So two things hit me. One, it will be the last postseason no-hitter. No one's ever going to do that again. No one's allowed to go that deep into a game.
Yeah.
I mean, Zach Wheeler last year dominated the Mets. He came out in the eighth inning. I think we'll never see that again.
Well, I don't know. Like, for as dominant as Halladay looked in that game, I think he would have had to have been, like, crazy to even think about pulling. Like if you're carrying a no-hitter into the seventh or eighth, or like into the eighth, say, and your stuff still looks that dominant, could you imagine pulling that guy?
Do you think Topper would let Wheeler go out there with 130 pitches?
It's got to be a max.
It has to be a max.
Pitch to Maddux.
Right. It has to be something unique like that. The second thing is, there's something just so amazing in that guy waited a decade to make the playoffs. In his first playoff game, he throws a no-hitter.
He was an unbelievable pitcher, dude.
He really was.
And by the way, that play by Chooch,
yes,
who is top five on some people's list.
Multiple.
Yeah, not a gimme play.
No,
for
it was
him.
A hard play.
Like that, like just dribbled over the bat that was dropped.
And I haven't.
In front of home plate?
Yeah, it was a great play. And I haven't brought it up to today, but that Reds lineup, that was a very good lineup.
Yeah.
That had
Roland,
right, old Roland, Jay Bruce, young Joey Votto.
MVP Votto.
Yeah, Brandon Phillips. Like that wasn't like sometimes you face, like when the Phillies played the Marlins 2 years ago in the playoffs, like, whatever. Like that team stinks. That Reds team had some real hitters on it. Yeah. What a moment for Roy Halladay there. All right. We had to wait a while for another moment around here after 2010 in the postseason. Let's fast forward. I remember exactly where I was standing in Citizens Bank Park. 3 years ago, October 2022, against the Braves, Game 3 of the NLDS.
Two on, one out. And the pitch. Swung on!
Did it!
Crushed! And the Phillies are going to lead it! 4-0! A three-run home run for Rhys Hoskins! His first postseason home run! And he's sprinting around third base! What a moment here at Citizens Bank Park.
I that one gives me chills. I mean, I can remember the feeling of the crowd. It was, I felt like the place was moving. My ears hurt afterwards.
That place was ready to look. That was 10 years or 11 years of pent up aggression.
Yep.
Just unleashed in that game. And by the way, this goes to what I was saying earlier with how that run had more moments than the other two. After them, like, combined.
Mm-hmm.
You know, homered right after that.
Harper.
Of course.
Yeah, it's a right field, yeah.
That was, like, the start of, like, holy crap.
Yeah, that was. It was, like, what the switch flipped. Like, that team was just so, like, up and down the whole year. Now, they were good in June and July, but then September stunk, and they got swept by the Cubs, and all of a sudden, they just flipped a switch. They were the classic, like, if you get hot, you never know.
And it was 1-1, because we had won Game 1 in Atlanta, lost Game 2.
Well, remember what happened in Game 2. Rhys dropped the ball at first base.
That's right, yep. And then and that was a pent-up emotion, too, just by Rhys to spike the bat there. But, man, like, just remembering the way I felt going into the Game 3, I'm like, well, it was a best of five. So you're like, this is the game right here. Like, they need to win this game. And then, man, a 9-1 ass whooping of the Braves all started off by Hoskins and that home run. That was amazing.
And similar to the CeCe thing, they wore it was the Stott at bat that wore out Strider, and then his velocity dropped, and they just crushed him. All right, let's get to the final one on the list. We have the great moments of the last 25 years. Bedlam at the bank, they like to say.
Two balls, two strikes to Bryce Harper. Suarez delivers. Swing and a drive, left field. It's deep. It's going. Yes. And it is gone.
Yes. Yes.
It is bedlam at the bank as Bryce Harper has put the Phillies on top.
Are you kidding me?
His 10th career home run in the postseason. And he may never hit a bigger one.
Bedlam at the bank, everyone, right? Not Bedlam at the park. Oh, Andy.
Oh, dude.
It's so bad.
That's terrible. I mean, that's a disgrace.
But that moment was obviously great. All right, so here's the question. We played seven great moments in the last 25 years. There's no such thing as a top seven.
No,
you got to have five.
Yep. Yeah.
So what gets
Stairs
cut?
Is out.
I agree with you.
Stairs is out.
I started putting a little check mark next to ones that need to be on the final five, and I did not have a check mark next to Stairs. So what else leaves?
Then it's tough, man.
So I think that the three that have to be in the top five are the end of the World Series with Harry's call.
Yep.
Bedlam at the bank. Mm-hmm. And I think the Hoskins bat slam has to be there. I think it's an iconic moment.
And probably, man, we're talking about the second no-hitter in playoff
okay,
history.
Okay, so Halliday's four.
I think
that
so.
That means one of the Victorino home run or the Rollins doubles out. Fran, what do you think?
They won the World Series. Wait, it's Victorino.
That one stays.
I think he's right.
I think so. Yeah,
I think so too, man. And it hurts me because because my favorite Fransky call, the Rollins double into the gap.
So the call is a huge part of it, but it's also the moment, like how it holds up and what matters.
Yeah, but I think Fran's on it. Like
I think he is too.
Leading to a World Series, it's tough.
All right, so the five best Phillies moments since 2000, in whatever order you want to put them, but end of the World Series with Harry's call, the Myers at bat into Victorino, the Halliday no hitter. Rhys Hoskins bat slam and Bedlam at the bank. I think we figured it out.
Yeah. And you know what, man? I got to say.
Do we miss one?
No. Okay. No. I'm just thinking, like, because I'm thinking of how we would order them. And I believe Bedlam in the bank gets an auto spot in that top five. That might be, I mean, is that not the most clutch moment of all of them?
The Bedlam at the bank?
Yeah.
It is the most clutch. Yeah.
Like, I mean, they were going to win that World Series in 08. That wasn't like a. You know, like they were threatening.
Yeah. It is the most clutch one. Yeah, it was a home run to put them in the World Series. I mean,
unbelievable moment.
It's one of the biggest moments in the history of the franchise.
And like, I can't stress this enough. He was so good in that postseason run that by the time he got up to the plate there, I haven't felt this way since Ryan Howard. I'm like, this man is going to put one in the seats.
Yeah, you almost expected
And then he did it. I was like, no bleeping way.
Yeah,
like,
it kind of reminded me of like what David Ortiz was 25 years ago.
Like
you started expecting him to get a hit every time. Yep.
You've been listening to the best of the Phillies on Sports Radio 94 WIP.